Welcome, I'm Mark Steiner. There's a bill being put before the state legislature to allow medical marijuana be used for medical usage here in the state of Maryland. It's being introduced by Dr. Dan Morheim. Dan is a member of the House of Delegates from the 11th District in Baltimore County, around Pikesville. He is an emergency room physician and co-sponsor of this legislation. The other half, by the interesting enough, is David Brinkley, who is a state senator who is a Republican. We're joined in studio by John, who is a medical marijuana user and an advocate for legalization. And on the phone, Dr. David Behrman joins us, who is a physician in California and an expert on drug abuse treatment and prevention. And we'll be joined shortly also by Karen Woodson, who is head of government affairs for the Americans for Safe Access. And if it sounds like on the show there's nobody here against it, it's true. None of the delegates who opposed it wanted to join us today, but we will have further debates with both sides here on the air. At 410-319-8888, write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I'd like to know what you all think. I mean, do you think, that we should pass laws in the state of Maryland that allow marijuana to be used in medical cases, people who have AIDS, cancer, other diseases, stressful disease, stress and other things, and what that you think that would do? Some people even think we don't go far enough and need just to legalize it, period. Your thoughts about that? 410-319-8888. We have with us now Dr. David Behrman's on the phone.
I'm Dave Behrman, Dr. Dave Behrman. I'm out here in California.
Where about?
And you're the state legislator?
Yes.
Yeah, and I understand you're an ER physician?
Yes.
Actually, board certified in internal and emergency medicine.
Great.
So I basically did hardcore ER for a long time and now internal medicine.
Fantastic.
How about you?
And I also heard that you would spend some time in California.
I was born and raised in L.A.
I went to
UC Santa Cruz in Berkeley and lived in the Bay Area for 3 years before getting into medical school in New York and then from the East.
So, gentlemen, let me just tell you, this is Mark Steiner. Let me start this conversation off with Dan Morheim. And Dan, I just want you to introduce briefly your bill so we can get into the conversation.
Great. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Yes. The bills that were filed today, and we'll have bill numbers tomorrow, there are two bills. One moves marijuana on the drug schedules. It's a listing of drugs 1 through 5 from 1 to 2. But the more important, where it falls into categories with narcotics and other drugs that are dangerous but have medical use. The other bill spells out how marijuana can be grown in Maryland and dispensed. The growing would be only in state-certified facilities. Sorry, no grow your own. We want to make sure there's a safe and consistent product. Dispensing would go through pharmacies or special dispensaries. Why not use pharmacies that already handle drugs that are as complicated as OxyContin and other drugs? So let's use the pharmacies. And it would instructions would come from a physician that has an ongoing bona fide relationship with a patient. But clearly, at the end of the day, marijuana is just another tool in the toolbox. Physicians, I'm a physician, we prescribe drugs that are more dangerous, have more side effects, and marijuana is not benign, but when it can help people, we ought to have it available for them in a safe, responsible, and judicious manner. Why would we deny people treatment, something that can really help them when they have certain symptoms like intractable nausea or severe muscle spasms? So, that's the idea of the bill. And I'm proud to say also we have a broad coalition of co-sponsors, Democrats and Republicans, from across the state.
And David Behrman, talk a bit about how you of that and how it has fared in California.
Well, I want to congratulate legislator on submitting this. It reflects common sense, and I think that it addresses some of the issues that some of us here who consider ourselves responsible cannabinoid medicine physicians are concerned about. One of the things that you have here that I think the Maryland legislation wants to address are the so-called pot dogs. And I do think, though, that you have to educate all physicians, because I personally would like to see those physicians who say refer their patients to me to make recommendations and do evaluations to do their own recommendations. Our problem here in California, I think, is twofold. One is that we need to educate physicians, and I think that this legislation might take a look at something that they did in California several years ago regarding pain management and require physicians to have, say, 6 hours of continuing medical education on cannabinoid medicine. I also think that they may have set up some administrative mechanisms that may be a little bit too cumbersome. There should be a certain amount of portability, I think, in terms of the prescription, but I do think that they need to make sure that people aren't running all over to a number of different places. So this is going to be a step forward, and Maryland, I think, can learn from some of the mistakes that have been made, and I think that what they're doing in Rhode Island and what they're doing in New Mexico offer very good models to use. What familiarity I have with the legislation is that certain of the cures to the problems here in California may be too administrative and administratively cumbersome. And I have a lot of professional experience both as a physician, a practicing physician, and also in administrative medicine. And I would urge the legislators there to some of the folks who have experience in this, and somebody that I would strongly recommend that they talk to is Dr. Fitchner, who is the former director of medical health for the state of Illinois, and a very knowledgeable physician, as well as somebody who understands bureaucracy.
John, let me turn to you, and before we turn to Karen Woodson and go back to Dan Morheim. I'd like you to just talk a bit about your experience. I mean, you identify yourself as a medical marijuana user and also an advocate for legalization completely, which we'll get to in a minute. But talk about your sojourn in a state where medical marijuana is not legal in terms of being prescribed. And tell us about your story and what happened to you.
I've spent many years basically under the knife. And since I was young, had Crohn's. I've had many surgeries. I've had colostomies taken on and off. I've had multiple surgeries, probably over 30 or 40. So I'm in pain. I go to bed in pain and wake up in pain. And modern medicine and modern drugs allow us to only go so far. I see too many friends on Ambien and Valium and Percocets and all of these drugs that I find they lose control of their lives in a way. I think it's crazy that everyone else can find the drug. A 14-year-old is accessible to it. To a 60-year-old is accessible to it. Everyone's accessible except the people that really need it. And isn't that crazy that the people that really need it can't get it? And if they do have to get it, then they're considered doing something illegal and can be prosecuted. Really, for only doing something that is relieving their pain and allowing them to live a better life rather than putting themselves on Percocets or Percodan. We see the population on heavy medication, and I think there are better choices. And I just believe that the generation, we all know people that use it for beneficial reasons. I've seen it all my life, and I think it's time. I congratulate the doctor for putting out the legislation. I do believe that California has gone a little too far, and I do believe that Maryland can probably do it a little better. They have tight controls of their alcohol. They probably can have tight controls of creating a system that's accessible, that's legal, that's quantifiable and taxable, and that works. And I hope that we move in that next to the next piece here. I hope this gets passed.
And Karen Goodson, has your take the same, or is a little bit different than this?
Yeah. Thanks, Mark, for having me on.
Glad to have you here.
Hello to the fellow panelists here. I'm quite familiar with Dr. Bierman, and I do want to thank, extend my congratulations and thanks to Dr. Morheim for being willing to, take this on and champion the issue of reform, because I think, as John stated, as a medical marijuana patient, it is very difficult for patients to understand or even have a positive experience here in Maryland with respect to their medical marijuana laws. And I don't necessarily agree with John that if you're 60 years old, you have access, because we run into patients all the time, in particular senior citizens, who have no idea about where to access medical marijuana in situations where their physicians have provided that recommendation. But I think, and I've met with Dr. Morheim. I think he's coming from a good place. I think his intentions are good and are solid, but we're a little concerned that the bill's onerous and arbitrary provisions will jeopardize access for patients, especially in the early days of enactment of this legislation.
So what's onerous or arbitrary in the bill that you think Dr. Morheim's presenting to the Maryland State
Well,
Legislature?
I think, I understand where Dr. Morheim's coming with, and let me just start off by saying any state that has a mandatory registration system, that has a mandatory ID card system, and a and general statewide rules for how dispensing collectors should operate is by definition miles and yards beyond where California is at. That is the primary problem in California, is that we don't have a clear state regulatory body.
Okay.
So drafting legislation, if the goal is to get away from California and not be like California, just having a centralized government system that requires patients to register and stuff like that, miles and yards ahead of California. But there's some provisions in this legislation that we are really concerned about, chief of which is the restriction on patient cultivation. And where I understand Dr. Morheim wants to have something similar to the pharmacy distribution system, or like we have in any other medical system, or dealing with the aspect of treatment and drugs in mm-hmm. our healthcare system, the fact is that states that choose to create these laws have to deal with a federal conflict. And by, few individuals are going to be willing to risk the very lengthy sentencing guidelines that will accompany federal prosecution for people who are cultivating large amounts of marijuana.
So let me ask, I'm curious, David Bierman, how you get around that in California, and go back to Dan Morheim about how that's affected in this bill in terms of what Karen was saying, then we'll turn over to John. John Bierman.
Well, everybody sort of takes their own risk here, and the problem, frankly, is that over the last 60 years, politicians and the Supreme Court have been far too cute, I think, in playing fast and loose with the Constitution. We go back to the 1942 Wickard versus Thilburn decision that stretched the Commerce Clause to the breaking, and we realized that the federal government is trying to usurp states' rights in terms of regulating the practice of medicine. And this was the position taken in Gonzalez versus Raich by Sandra Day O'Connor, Clarence Thomas, and William Rehnquist, who I don't think anybody would confuse any of those three with being a liberal. And they said the states should be regulating the practice of medicine. And I agree with Dr. Morheim that this should be dispensed through pharmacies. My father was a pharmacist. He started being a pharmacist in 1928.
Okay.
Cannabis in the U.S. Pharmacopeia until 1941. It ought to be dispensed from pharmacies. That said, in terms of growing cannabis in California, that is definitely a gray area, and that's an area that has to be addressed. The dispensaries are more or less protected by the Attorney General's position that he said both orally and put in writing. Doctors are protected by, at least out here, a decision by the Ninth Circuit Court that says we have the freedom of speech to give whatever advice we want based on our experience and training. The patients have been off the hook for a number of years because the DEA in the Bush administration said they weren't going to go after individual patients. And so the issue is, how do you deal with growing? Right now, I think we need to deal with short-term issues. The long-term issue is to get the federal government to follow the Constitution and to go along with the dissent that Sandra Day O'Connor made in Gonzalez versus Raich. But when you go to these large grows, it's an invitation to the federal government to come in and just shut down the whole thing. And I think that it's a very dicey issue to have to deal with in a practical way.
Precisely. And the sentencing guidelines that people get for cultivating a personal amount of marijuana is anywhere between 0 and 6 months, which is hardly worth federal time.
Well, let me jump in here.
Dan Morheim.
Yeah, thank you, Mark.
Then we'll go over to John.
First of all, what we have is different states trying different things. because of the confusion at the level of the federal government, as
right.
Dr. Bierman referred to. This could all be fixed if the federal government would merely move marijuana from Schedule 1, where it's mixed in with drugs like heroin and LSD, and move it to Schedule 2. By the way, oral marijuana, which the active ingredient, which doesn't work very well for a host of reasons, which is called Marinol, is on Schedule 3, further down. So you just move marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2, and then it just becomes a prescribable drug like everything else. Physicians don't take special courses to, you know, a special certification to learn how to prescribe, you know, medications of any type. In my 30 years as a doctor, I've learned about new diabetic medications, new high blood pressure medicines, new all kinds of things, procedures, and techniques. That's part of being professional. We don't make patients register. We don't have them sign up. And it's a doctor-patient relationship. And, of course, if you step out of the bounds of inappropriate prescribing, there are all sorts of ways that physicians get in trouble, and they should when they step out of bounds. But, you know, and so I just really try to look at marijuana as another way of helping some patients with some intractable problems that are not amenable to other things that are available. And it's a very simple point of view. And I'm aware that it has, you know, there's reasons to use it, reasons not to use it, there's side effects, as there are with any medication. For that matter, you can go to the drugstore and buy 10 Benadryl and become impaired. So, you know, we allow that right now. The issue of the details of the bill, I understand. I'm listening to all points of view. I'm also trying to be a practical politician and get something passed. And, you know, to round up the votes on this bill is going to be very, very difficult.
Well, I'm going to talk to you.
There are certain things that simply a lot of my colleagues are uncomfortable with, and grow your own is one of them. And
let me let John come in for a second. Then,
Doctor, I would very much agree with you. Number one, I don't like the fact that marijuana would be considered like you need a card rather than if you need Percocet, I don't need a special card.
That's
and
right.
I don't need to sign up for something. It disturbs me that you'd have to sign up for something not as hard as a Demerol. You can give me 4 milligrams of Demerol and 100 of them, but you're worried about me signing a card for a plant that's grown in the backyard. So that's one thing that worries me. I understand there's a very different understanding between rural people and urban people.
Mm-hmm.
Urban people need pharmacies. They need to get everything from in the city. They need to go to the grocery store. Rural people don't like going out to get anything. They want their cows. They want their own milk, their own chickens. You know, I wish I could be that kind of person, but I'm not. So I do believe one of the fights is mainly because we have two very different mentalities thinking about it. A rural person wants to do everything themselves. An urban person doesn't. They want to go to the pharmacy. They want to get their drugs that way. They want to do that. So I believe we just have two very different philosophies. I do believe this state is very conservative, and your bill is pretty complete and allows true medical marijuana needers, the real sick people, to really have it accessible. And I would go back to the young lady. You're right. It is not accessible to anyone right now except illegally by everyone else except for the people that really need it. And it's
can I say something about the patients? Because
we have to one at a time. John, David Bierman, then Karen Woodson. Go ahead, David.
Is one of the things that happens as we look in on making laws, and I realize that there are practical political considerations, and there's the old canard about there's two things that shouldn't be watched being made, one sausage and the other are the laws. But I think that sometimes the politicians, and it's certainly true here locally at our own city council, starts looking at the laws and the nuances, and they lose sight of the fact that we're talking about people. And the gentleman who's a patient mentioned patients, and certainly Crohn's disease is a very serious disease, and there's surgery that often is used to treat it. And we found that cannabis is very successful in decreasing the symptoms and decreasing the need for surgery in that condition. That you've got people that are paraplegics, quadriplegics, suffering from migraine headaches, from seizures. And I would just ask that all of the legislators, whether they're for or against this, be sure that they keep uppermost in their mind that we're talking about people, we're talking about human beings. And I have been amazed, and obviously I'm a proponent, but I am continually amazed at the results that people tell me that they get. And the use of the word miraculous by patients is not unusual in my practice.
Are you trying to say something, Karen, before we go back to Dan?
Yeah, thanks. One of the things I think is important to say here is that I do respect that Dr. Morheim is looking at various states and is, you know, playing around with what might be possible here and there and what's working and not working in other places. But I want to caution both patients that are listening to the program, and I want to caution legislators that might be looking to, pass this legislation as is, and let people know that the only place, the only state that has toyed around with the centralized distribution system is New Mexico. And our experience in New Mexico is this, that within 6 months of the program being operated and granting the license to the producers, they ran out of medicine. And patients did not have access for a good solid year in New Mexico to the medicine prescribed and recommended by their physicians. So if the goal of the legislation is to put medicine in patients' hands, I think we need to look and really learn from the experiences of states that have programs in operation. Because looking to a state where regulations haven't been formed yet, where the issue hasn't, where enactment hasn't happened yet and won't happen for another year, probably isn't the best place to look or the best way to take legislative advice.
What do we think?
What we know from experience is that when patients have been brought to a centralized cultivation system, they do not get medicine in hand. They do not get a variety of strains. They do not get a huge amount of access because those cultivators have to make sure medicine is available at least in small amounts to all the patients. And so patients don't get what they need. Some patients don't get anything at all.
And so, Dan Morheim, who's going to grow the marijuana in Maryland if your bill passes?
Well, in Maryland, it would be growers that would be licensed and certified by the state. They'd have to meet certain standards, everything from security to pharmacological testing and being sure the marijuana isn't adulterated in any way. One of the challenges is with any pharmaceutical product is to be sure that it's what it purports to be. Obviously, right now in Maryland, we don't have that. You go out on the patients who go out on the street are buying unknown substance from unknown people for varying amounts of money, with the money going, in fact, you know, out of state to the Mexican drug lords or the Medellin cartel, if I can extend it that far. Clearly, you want to have a safe pharmaceutical product and a range of pharmaceutical products, ultimately, where it's known what it is. Hopefully people will see that this is an opportunity for making money in an appropriate way, and we'll, produce the product. If there's problems, we always make adjustments. There's a lot of stuff that is going to be done by regulation, and various people are meeting with the various agencies, specifically the Department of Health and the Department of Agriculture. But clearly, I think I'll try to read what my legislative colleagues are saying. They're uncomfortable, regardless of my personal feelings or anybody else's,
right.
Uncomfortable with a system that might allow wide-open growing of marijuana. Many have concerns. That's their belief.
We only have 2 minutes to break, and I know that David Bierman has to go for the break. So we have 2 minutes before we have to take a break here, David Bierman. If you want to just throw in a thought here.
It turns out I'll be able to stick with you a little bit longer than I thought.
So I'm very quickly then, I'm curious, I mean, how do you codify who can grow marijuana if it's been illegal to grow it?
But you'd apply. Look,
how do you apply for that job?
Let me do it this way, Mark. we took a vice, the legislature, with the support of the citizens, and I believe, that, by the way, the polls on this are about 80% in favor. So
yeah.
Right.
Hopefully people will communicate with their legislators. That's the key part. There are a lot of aspects of this bill. We can work out the details. But, you know, we took a vice, which was slots, and we made it, if not a virtue, an acceptable behavior.
Right.
You can apply for a slots license. You have to meet certain standards.
Right.
There's certain locations. It's defined. And then you can participate, own, or run an activity that a few years ago was illegal. We determined, rightly or wrongly, to make it legal. It's the same thing now. You can take a product that is illegal, and you can grow it in a licensed and certified place, have to meet certain standards. And then you become a grower. You'll sell it off to the dispensaries or distribute it to the pharmacies, and there'll be transactions. Marijuana.
I'll let you all. Excuse me, everybody. We have to take a very short break. Everybody can come back and jump into this as soon as we come back. I want to get our listeners in this at 410-319-8888. Should we have a medical marijuana law in the state of Maryland that allows doctors to dispense marijuana? It's going to be before the Senate legislature. What do you think? Do you think it should be legal altogether or remain illegal altogether? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow at gmail.com. Join Healthcare for the Homeless for the sweetest night in town, the 19th Annual Chocolate Affair. Sample more than 50 of Baltimore's best restaurants, caterers, and chocolatiers while raising the resources and awareness necessary to end homelessness. The Chocolate Affair is Thursday, February the 4th. That's tomorrow night from 6 to 9:30 p.m. at M&T Bank Stadium. Tickets and more information are available at chocolateaffair.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We're talking about medical marijuana. There'll be a debate in the House of Delegates and the state legislature, period. A bill introduced by Dan Moreheim, who's a physician, member of the House of Delegates, and co-sponsor of this bill along with Senator David Brinkley, who is a Republican. Dan Moreheim is a Democrat, to allow medical marijuana in the state of Maryland. We're joined by him. We're joined by John, who is a medical marijuana user and advocate for legalization. And since it's not really legal to use it in the state, we're just using John's first name. Dr. David Bierman is with us, who's a physician in California and an expert on drug abuse treatment and prevention and this whole area. Karen Woodson is with us. She's head of government affairs for Americans for Safe Access. Number here is 410-319-8888. What are your thoughts on the medical marijuana bill? Should we have marijuana available to physicians to give, not to physicians, but physicians to get prescriptions to allow people to get have marijuana? And some people even take it beyond that. They say that's not far enough. 410-319-8888. Join us here with your thoughts. We'll come to the phones, but I want to, I think David Bierman and Karen Woodson were both trying to leap in at the same time. So let me let you leap in one at a time. David and Karen, then right to the phones.
Karen, go ahead. You go first.
Thank you, David. Very kind of you.
Thanks, Dr. Bierman. I just wanted to say, just to be clear, ASA unequivocally supports changes to state law that are going to establish comprehensive legal and civil protections for patients. I think where we are cautioning legislators, and particularly the co-sponsors of these bills in both the House and the Senate, is that we really are advising policymakers to enact laws that help minimize the risk of federal prosecution and interference. In the decade that ASA has been tracking federal raid activity, It is abundantly clear to us and has been stated over and over and over again by the federal government. They are uninterested in patients who are using, possessing, cultivating a small personal amount of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Where the spark and ire of the federal government is unwielded onto the states is where we see large cultivating grows, places where growers have 50, 60, 70, 80, 150, 200, 800 plants. And I understand the political expedient reasons that Dr. Moreheim is giving for this provision. However, as a champion for reform, it is absolutely incumbent that he educate his colleagues about the potential for federal interference here. And our experience, time and again, is that where those grows are large and his provision requiring an RFP of $100,000 puts into very serious jeopardy those cultivators. If those cultivators are arrested and prosecuted, there is no access.
And David Bierman, you were trying to say what?
Yeah, I want to weigh in on the same issue and give you a little anecdote. About 10 years ago, when I started focusing on medical marijuana recommendations as part of my pain management practice, a rose grower down the road in Carpinteria, who happened to be a native of the Netherlands, called me up and said, "Gee, I'd be interested in growing marijuana." And I said, Tim, I think you're being pretty naive and you don't understand the laws. And he said, well, come on down and look at my operation. And this gentleman had three greenhouses, each one the size of about three football fields. He had a very large, successful rose growing operation. And it would be perfect for doing what Dr. Moorhaime is suggesting of having a standardized product, and that's exactly what we should have. But I said, you know, I think maybe we should get together in 9 or 10 years after things have settled down here and maybe the laws have changed. And it seems to me that it's asking an awful lot of somebody like this rose grower who has a substantial investment in his infrastructure to take this kind of risk. I mean, I'd love to see happen what the doctor is proposing. It's just that as a practical matter, we've got to get the federal government out of the way. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, you've got patients in the state of Maryland that may run into difficulty if the federal government does what they have historically done and go after large growers.
And I do want to get to the phones here, unless either Dan or John want to say something very quickly, but on the way to the phones.
Well, clearly the solution is for the federal government to make the change. And as states continue to find their own way, it ultimately puts pressure on federal legislators. And I've written mine and the president on down for all the agency heads and say, why don't you just move marijuana into a proper category and let it be prescribed like any, you know, manufactured, distributed, and prescribed like any other medicine. That would be the appropriate thing to do. We wouldn't have these all these variation debates on what states can and can't do. And, you know, what happens in California, it's a lot different than what can happen in Maryland for a whole host of reasons.
Let me open the phones that our listeners come in here. 410-319-8888. Jim in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, how are you doing?
Well, Jim, thank you for joining us.
So, the thing that I really wanted to discuss and press, you know, my opinion is that, you know, way too many people are just greatly misinformed about, I suppose, the effects of marijuana, you know, on a person. I have myself smoked marijuana for about 12 years. I've grown marijuana before. And, you know, I'd just like to say that it has no long-lasting side effects. It doesn't hurt you. Like, you know, how many people die every year from drinking too much alcohol? And, you know, compare that to how many people die every year from smoking too much marijuana. You know, it's zero to, you know, probably thousands. So I don't understand why it's still illegal anywhere. And I'm definitely a proponent of, you know, legalizing it in any manner possible.
John, you want to comment on that?
I'm not really on that. I'd like to comment about the logistics of the bill and the growers. It seems that if the state was clear on what the restrictions are, how many plants, what it's necessary to get your license, who's growing it, who's working for you, and takes that kind of approach, then how could the federal government then step into the state of Maryland and say, this grower is not okay, we're going to bust him, if he's following the exact guidelines of the state of Maryland?
Because it's not about state law. It's about enforcement of federal law, and in our system, in the federalist system that we have set up, we have two different sets of laws. And the Supreme Court said it doesn't matter what a state does. It has no bearing on federal law what a state does in terms of setting up its practices for regulation and distribution of medical cannabis. The federal government is free, clear, and advised to go ahead and enforce federal law. And we saw this happen last week. We saw the federal government, the Drug Enforcement Administration, was in Colorado raiding not a grower, not a patient, not a dispensing collective, but a laboratory conducting testing on marijuana to make sure it was safe. So back to Dr. Moorhaime's point about including all of these testing provisions in the bill, while 100% ASA supports that in theory, but we operate with patients and caregivers and growers and dispensing collective operators who every day face federal charges. This is an act of civil disobedience. It doesn't matter what the state does. Everyone participating in the state program
is committing
a civil act of disobedience against the federal government.
Ken, I think we understand that. I'm only rushing it just because we have a lot of people calling in. I want to get there are four guests. I want to give you all a chance to say something here. And I'm curious, David, very quickly, how it works, how this has worked in California, and B, from Dan Moorhaime, how you think this through for this bill. And then we'll go back to the phones, and Ron in Columbia, the next caller up. David?
You know, I think that the grower situation in California is working pretty well. I think what is not working well is that we have some doctors who are practicing what I call fig leaf medicine, and I applaud Dr. Morheim for trying to do something to marginalize that. Also, there's a problem caused by the fact that you can go from one dispensary to the next and get your approval or recommendation recognized at several different places on the same day. As far as the growers have gone, it really depends on the area of the state that you're operating as to how sympathetic law enforcement is to you. But it has not created a great problem. And I think if you look at the statistics, you find that the teenagers, which people raise all the time, do not have any greater access here than they would anywhere else. As a matter of fact, I've had some patients come in who wanted to get their cannabis legally because they were getting it from their teenage or college age nieces and nephews or sons and daughters.
Dan?
Just go to the next caller.
410-319-8888. Ron in Columbia, you're on the air. Hi, Ron, you there?
Hi, good evening.
Good evening, Ron. Well, welcome.
Okay, Mark, first of all, just enjoy your show all the time.
Thank you.
My question is, how do we determine what medical ailments, what medical problems would, that we would recognize and use as a factor to determine if somebody could get a card to get medical marijuana? I mean, you know, how do we look in the medical field and say, okay, well, this patient has this problem. Is there a specific amount of problems that medical marijuana cures, you know, that we have explained there? Okay, there's six different medical ailments or problems that you may have, that a patient may have that would warrant them being able to get a card, to get medical marijuana. So how do we do that?
Right.
And then how do we stop all the fraud that's going to happen when folks can go, hey, doc, I'm not feeling well. Okay, well, you can go ahead and get a card. I mean, how do we control that?
I'll hang up
and listen to your answer.
Great questions. And each one of our guests may have a slightly different answer.
Well, let me start in.
Dan Morheim.
Yeah, thank you, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
First, it's an excellent question. Let's go back. This country's been way too marijuana phobic. So unfortunately,
right,
in the last 20 or 30 or 40 years, the research on marijuana simply hasn't happened. So I certainly want to be on record that we ought to be researching all these things, administering medications to people. They ought to be as thoroughly researched as possible. And even when they are, it doesn't always work out or things are found out later, like in Vioxx. So first, there needs to be, substantial ongoing research so we learn better what it's used for and what it's not. There are some good studies. There's a lot of, personal stories and anecdotal evidence. Specifically in the legislation, we list a number of broad-based conditions. And the legislation is being proposed in Maryland, severe wasting disease, severe muscle spasms, intractable nausea, some general categories. And then there's a catch-all, which is an ongoing bona fide doctor-patient relationship with full documentation. When other treatments have failed, it could be used. But, of course, we don't do that for any other medication. So it's an inconsistency in that. And, that's why I try to model this bill as much as like we prescribe for anything else. And there's plenty of controls and checks and balances in the system for that. It's just the unfortunate circumstance because of this complex matrix and inconsistencies between federal and state laws that we end up trying to craft something that defines in law how marijuana could be used. There's nothing else in law in Maryland that says how any other drug might be prescribed, not in state law. It's in
Doctor,
good textbooks of medical practice, but not in state law.
Doctor, I would agree with you. It's about the relationship between the doctor and the patient. My doctor's been seeing me for 15 years. She prescribes me all of my drugs. I've signed a documentation with her that she is the only one I get my pain medicine through. So your bill was pretty clear, it seemed, that the patient relationship with the doctor had to be a strong one. So that relationship was understood. And if she prescribed that for the patient, it made sense for the patient.
Let me jump in here. This is
David Berman
in California. California. When I make an assessment with a patient, because California is pretty wide open and we do have physicians who I think play fast and loose with the law, I look at this with a hypothetical. If I hypothetically assume that the medical board here was reasonable, which I haven't always found them to be, if hypothetically they could ask me to explain why I made a recommendation, that I'd be able to do so in a manner in which they would understand. So I think that it's important for this bill to work with the Maryland equivalent to the California Medical Board to make sure that they're on board and understand what's appropriate. And then I would suggest that they look to various consultants that understand the medical value of cannabis, whether it's somebody like the California Marijuana Research Center located in San Diego, whether it's patients out of time that put on conferences every other year on medical marijuana that's located right over in Virginia, or whether it's our new organization called the American Academy of Cannabinoid Medicine. I do think that one of the issues here about having an ongoing doctor-patient relationship speaks to the broader issue of the need for health care reform. I mean, there are people out there that are homeless, that can't afford doctors, but don't have a regular doctor. And I think that needs to be looked at to make sure that those people are not marginalized as a result of this very well-intended piece of legislation.
And, Karen, do you want to say something as well before we move on?
I mean, we like the provision in terms of, you know, controlling the pot doxing. I think that Dr. Bierman raises a great issue about those that are uninsured. And I think Dr. Morheim, you know, I think skimmed the issue in terms of we have had a 30 to 70 year phobia on marijuana in this country, and I just don't know how willing and able some physicians in Maryland are going to be right off the bat to provide these recommendations. So when someone has a physician that is unwilling, just based on the phobia and everything he hears about marijuana from the federal government, you know, what happens to that patient? Are they restricted to that physician? Do they have to go establish a new relationship with another physician? I think it's just another practicality issue that, well, I understand where he's at, and we support eliminating that infrastructure where doctors are just seeing patients with the express relationship being the recommendation of marijuana. But I do have concerns for patients who have legitimate need who may not have a physician willing to make that recommendation. And
Karen,
I
share lots of concerns about lots of patients that have lots of legitimate needs
right.
that don't get
right.
treated at all. I mean, I work clinically at Healthcare for the Homeless, so and I did 30 years of emergency medicine. I've seen lots of patients with lots of needs that aren't getting treated, and if we want to go into the broader issue of that and healthcare reform, we can. I'm merely trying to get something through the door here that we can build on in the future, refine as we go. I've been in the legislature 15 years, and that happens. That's a common thing. I will never represent that this bill or any other bill, you know, is etched in stone and is final till the end of time. It's an ongoing process. We come back every year and we refine things.
And
the goal here
that.
Is to try to get something passed so that we can, you know, get on to first base.
Dr. Morheim, I challenge you to continue your championship of this bill because we have not had state legislatures come back and fix issues with bills. It just has not happened.
Well, we do that commonly with lots of legislation in Maryland, and that's what we do.
David,
whether it's happened to marijuana or not, we haven't passed the bill here, but we do that all the time with legislation.
I implore you to stay on that.
I want to reinforce what Dr. Morheim is saying about getting to first base, and that is that I have been an expert witness in some cases in Maryland under the existing law, and it's really sad. I mean, where in one instance a person had a disability due to their back pain, and in order for them to get any relief from the criminal charges, they had to, as I understand it, go through the trial, and then only at the sentencing period could the attorney bring up, oh, by the way, this person is disabled, and they have been for several years, and they have back problems, they have back surgery. I mean, this guy's chart was about 2 inches thick. I think the point is that, yes, progress needs to be made, but if we're going to look at this, we should try to make it as practical as possible for the intended end user, which is the patient.
Let me reopen the phones here, 410-319-8888. And I have another question here for John and one for Dan Morheim as well. Zach and Bowie, you're on the air.
How's it going? I am pro legalization of cannabis. I've been smoking it since I've been smoking it for 7 years. I've seen no side effects. I've heard some of the callers that are anti legalization. I don't agree with them. I live in a family where the people I live with are against it, but they're letting me live there. They're not enjoying it, but I'm still living here, and I really would like to get a job trying to grow, because I have grown before. It's a blast. but if I could get a couple greenhouses with all that security, and if they did legalize it, I'd definitely be like one of the first people there on it.
Zach, thanks so much. Appreciate the call. Dan, talk about the opposition you're facing in the state legislature, where it's coming from and what's being said.
Well, I wouldn't say there's a coherent opposition. What it is a number of people, first of all, just have a very negative mindset about this, which is unfortunate.
Go ahead, Dan.
Okay. It's just, it's been, ingrained in them somehow, and it's very difficult to get some folks to see. There are folks who are concerned about the fact that no matter what we do at the state level, it's still illegal at the federal level. However we craft a bill, there are just people who say it's illegal at the federal level, and that's all they want to know. And then there's people who are concerned about the growing, the dispensation, the physician part, the card carrying, how the money will flow, the fees and structure. At every paragraph of this bill has got somebody that's got a concern with it. And I'm trying to, smooth the water and address as many concerns as I can. So it's a complex thing when you're tackling something like this. Dr. Berman was right. I mean, the Maryland law now is the best we could do in 2003. Basically says after you go through the whole court thing and pay attorney's fees and all that, and if you can prove that it was for medical purposes, you get a $100 fine and a misdemeanor instead of jail. So in effect, what we've said is there is some use to it. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had a medical defense. But what we're saying is you get to go out and be a criminal to get it, and that's just ridiculous at this point. So it's a lot of educating. I have a lot to learn. I've learned a lot. But I think the focus needs to be on, the governor and all the legislators, and at least people are talking about it now. There have been bills in every year for the past few years, but because of the American Medical Association changing its position a bit, because of the law that passed in New Jersey recently, nearby state, because of Attorney General Eric Holder's change of position, now Maryland is able to really have a serious discussion. But people also ask, what about the next Attorney General after Eric Holder? If Eric Holder has a change of heart himself and he decides he is going to go after prosecuting everybody, then what's the status of this legislation or legislation in the other state? So there's a lot of questions still to be answered, and we just have to work through them, and we have a process to do that.
Let me read a quick email that's come in here. We have a listener who writes in, "Well, I appreciate Dr. Moreheim's efforts. My concern is the 100,000 cultivation minimum this bill requires. In this way, the market is being limited to a few big growers that will limit the overall amount and variety of the medication. Furthermore, the 2 ounce per month profit provision will likely drive up prices beyond those currently being paid in the black market. There'll be no market competition. The grow your own option in other states keep the system in check, because if the dispensaries and collectives don't meet the needs of the patients, they can pull out and do their own. Marijuana is not a pill that requires a chemist. It's a plant that grows naturally. Why can we have safe, secure areas of our houses to grow things in? We are setting people up to be arrested and federally prosecuted by requiring the amount that Dr. Moreheim calls for. Patients cultivating small amounts on their own is not even worth federal attention, but 100,000 will be. That's another story. And when these people get arrested, there's no medication this law intends to provide. What's the problem? Why don't we do this thing right the first time, allow people to grow instead of waiting for the system to fail to change it?"
Excellent comment.
Well, let me try and respond to some of that.
Yeah.
First of all, there is a fee, and that's to ensure that people really are able to do it. Secondly, the fee can be adjusted. So if there aren't enough growers, then it can be adjusted down. The concern about Grow Your Own is that you get a wide variety of product. Many legislators believe that just opens up to a California situation where people will be growing left and right. And also, a lot of patients, when they get sick, they don't have the horticultural skill to start growing a plant and waiting, getting seeds and growing and waiting months and a while, and then figuring out how to cultivate it and dry it and do all the other things. A lot of folks have said they want a safe, consistent product. The fee is really to get into the game. But, you know, it's pretty reflecting a point of view. I respect it. I don't think it's going to be a winner in terms of rounding up votes, among other things. And I think that, we've got some challenges to work out there.
I wonder what the three of you think, though. These things are being battled across the country, clearly. Colorado, California, many other states, 43 states. Do I have that? Am I right about what's the number of states where it's legal right
14.
Now? 14.
14,
not 14,
and maybe the District of Columbia is on its way.
And all those laws and ways are a bit different.
They're quite varied, actually.
They're
varied in terms of maybe the very specific details, but by and large, every state, with the exception of New Jersey, allows patient cultivation. That's every state. In fact, Washington requires patient cultivation. So does Oregon. And we haven't seen federal activity in those states, believe it or not. New Mexico is the only state, like I said, that created a centralized system. New Mexico was smart enough on the front end of their legislation to say, look, we understand this could be a problem, and so we are going to make sure that if this problem happens, there is patient cultivation on the back end. But they ran into that problem. Exactly what we predicted would happen in New Mexico happened in New Mexico. They didn't have enough cultivators, patients didn't have access to medicine, and there was a problem there.
We have a couple minutes left here, and John, I know you wanted to say something, and we have one.
I'm torn between the two because I do agree that the patients need to have it accessible now, and that is probably through the pharmacies if that's possible. If the state could really produce growing houses that could produce enough and a variation that would really supply it to the public. But I have a feeling they won't be able to. So I truly hear all these points. It's a problem.
And very quickly, sure. Dan, what are the chances that the bill are going to pass, do you think, this year?
Well, I don't know, and I never tried to predict, but I like to think that in this discussion, we're all groping to try to get to the same place, which is providing patients with what they need in a responsible and judicious manner, you know, and as easily and affordably as possible. We have some different perspectives on how to get there, and I hope that folks recognize that we're all trying to get to the same place. I also would ask that they focus their attention not on those of us that are basically on that side, but to work on the ones that are thinking about this or even those that are completely opposed. That's where the public needs to put its attention. We'll find our way through the others, but we've got a lot of folks still to convince, and that's where the attention needs to be.
Dr. Dan Mohammed, we're out of time. I do appreciate everything you do for us,
everybody.
And that good to have you on the air with us. Dr. David Bierman, great to meet you, and thank you for being with us for this whole hour.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Karen Woodson, the same goes for you. And John, good to have you here in the studio.
Thank you.
And folks, stay with us. In the next hour, we're going to have a really powerful and interesting conversation with Rick Santos, who runs a medical group and was trapped for 55 hours in the rubble in Port-au-Prince, to talk about his experience. And then we're going to meet the folks who are putting on the production of Cyrano at Center Stage. So stay with us for all that. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, Urbanite talks about race in Baltimore, with stories about quest for diversity, the history of segregation, and why Baltimoreans still lead separate lives. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations. You can visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a list of drop locations. We'll be right back with Rick Santos about his harrowing tale of what happened to him in Haiti.